Well, please come with me to the reading which we had. And tonight we're going to meet Jacob, the man who met with God. Now, why should you bother listening tonight? Well, if you've grown up in a Christian home, if you've ever felt God is speaking to you, this is a message for you. If you feel that you're clever, savvy, smart, and you're looking to make your way in the world, here is a message for you. If your life's a tangled mess, if you're facing a crisis, this is a message for you. And we have five things to say. And number one, Jacob. Who is Jacob? Well, he's the son of Isaac and Rebekah, and he's a twin. And Jacob is the smooth one. It's his twin brother Esau who's the hairy one. And if Esau is Dad's favourite, then Jacob is Mummy's special boy. Now, it's difficult to like Jacob. He's not a likeable character. You ever play things like Shotgun or Bagsy, things like that? Whoever says it first gets first choice. Well, no matter how quick you'd be, Jacob's the kid who will beat you every time. He always seems to get his way. He knows what he wants, and he'll do anything to get it. He's smart, he's quick, he's ruthless, he's devious. He can outwit everybody else, but he's a cheat. And though he's grown up in a godly home, he's grown up with believing parents, as far as Jacob is concerned, he doesn't need God. God's going to get in the way. God's going to slow him down. Now, Jacob resents Esau. Although they're twins, Esau was born first. That gave him certain rights and privileges which Jacob didn't have. But as far as Jacob is concerned, he's much smarter than Esau. He's quicker, faster, more with it. He's the better of the two, and therefore the more deserving. So why should Esau get what Jacob deserves? Why should Esau be the heir? And so not once, but twice, Jacob cheats his brother, out of what is rightfully his. And the second time, Esau can't believe it. It's happened again. And he's distraught. And in a rage, he says, Genesis 27 and verse 36, "Is he not rightly named Jacob?" Jacob means deceiver, cheat. Is he not rightly called the deceiver? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now he's taken away my blessing. Well, Esau's not about to forget. And so he promises that when Dad dies, when Isaac's gone, "Jacob, I'm coming for you. Jacob, I'm going to kill you." So what does Jacob do? He does a runner. And he flees to Uncle Laban. So point number two. On his way to Uncle Laban, Jacob meets with God. Look at Genesis 28. And a famous incident. Genesis 28 and verse 11. "So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head. And he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it." So do you get the picture? In his dream, he sees a ladder. It could equally be translated as staircase. So in his dream, he sees this ladder, this staircase. As he lifts his eyes, he sees going up and down the staircase are angels. He lifts his eyes again, and at the top of the staircase is God himself. It's like a bridge between heaven and earth. And the God he's never bothered with now speaks. And in verses 13 to 15 of chapter 28, he promises to bless Jacob. Now, without going into all the details of what God says to Jacob, look at Jacob's response, chapter 28 and verse 16. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." Jacob has a real meeting with God. A meeting that shakes him. But as events will turn out, it's a meeting that doesn't change Jacob. He's unchanged. But it does make him aware that God is real. And that God is here. And it makes him willing to take God seriously. Verse 20, "If God will be with me and keep me in his way, in this way that I am going, and gives me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God." He's taking God seriously. In fact, it makes him even willing to, as it were, give God a cut of his life. Verse 22, "And this stone which I have set up as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." If God is all he's cracked up to be, if he does all he promises to do, then I'll give God his due. I'll give back to him a tenth of all he's given to me. So on his way to Uncle Laban, on his way to running away from Esau's threats, he has a real experience of God. It's an unforgettable experience of God. But it's an experience that doesn't actually change him. He's not saved. After Bethel, he's still the same old Jacob. To put it simply, he's not being converted. But now he knows that God is real. So point number three. Many years later, we're going to fast forward to that chapter, chapter 32. Many years have now passed. We're 20 plus years beyond that event at Bethel, chapter 28. And in the intervening years, Jacob has been with Uncle Laban. He's married his daughters, Rachel and Leah. And he's become a very rich man. Clever old Jacob. But now he's left Laban for good. And he's on his way back home. But he's facing the crisis of his life. In fact, his cleverness has brought him nothing but trouble. His life without God has brought him, it seems, to the brink of disaster. He may be wealthy, but you only have to read the intervening chapters to discover that his home life is a war zone. Think of it, he's got 11 sons by 4 different women, 2 of which are clawing at each other because they're rivals, they're sisters. But it's what he hears in chapter 32 that really puts the frighteners on him. Verse 6. "Then the messengers returned to Jacob saying, 'We came to your brother Esau.'" Okay, fine. He sent them to Esau. That's what he hears next. "And he is also coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him." Jacob's on his way home to find that Esau, the man, the brother who's promised to kill him, is coming this way with seemingly 400 angry men. No doubt he's coming to settle old scores and slaughter Jacob and Jacob's family. Verse 7, "So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed." What's he to do? He can't go back to Laban. He's burnt his boats. He can't sort of wander off into the wilderness because there are marauding tribes. So clever, slippery Jacob goes into overdrive. Verse 7, "So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into 2 companies. And he said, 'If Esau comes to one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape.'" There you go, you see, he's clever, isn't he? Always outwitting people. "I'll divide my party into 2. And if Jacob goes for one, then the other one will get through and be safe." Well, what else can you do when you're in a panic? What would you do? Pray. And so verses 9 to 12, he prays, he cries to God. Look at verse 11. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. Oh, it's real prayer, isn't it? It's heartfelt prayer. It's humble prayer. But maybe it's all too late. But it's still not enough. This is Jacob, remember. He's a man who's quick on his feet, always ready to outwit his opponent. So he's thinking. What can I do to overcome this problem, this situation? So next off, he prepares a series of presents for Esau. Read about them in verses 14 and 15. Presents are 200 female goats and 20 male goats and 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. Shows you how rich he is, doesn't he? These are just the presents. This is just what comes to hand. And he sends these presents off, drove after drove, leaving a gap between each one. And the message that goes with the servants is that when you meet Esau, you're to say that this is a present for you, Esau. And Jacob's not that far behind. And of course, Jacob's plan is that when Esau meets the first present, well, he may still be really angry. When he meets the second present, well, third, by the time he gets to present number 5, Jacob hopes Esau's anger will have cooled. And verse 20, Esau will be appeased, and he'll say, oh, Jacob, let bygones be bygones. But it's still not enough. Time we come to verse 22. He can't sleep. He's still trying to find a way out. How am I going to escape from Esau? He's got 400 angry men. What am I going to do? Looking for a way out. Verse 22. And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone. So what's he up to? Well, you get the impression, don't you, that they're the actions of a man who's run out of options. Maybe he's now pushing his wives and his children into the firing line. He's got nowhere left to run. He's alone. He's desperate. What's he going to do? Do you see? His cleverness, his ambition have brought Jacob to the brink of disaster. His me first, his Jacob is for Jacob, have driven him into a corner and there's no way out. How are you going to get out of this one, Jacob? And now he's ready to meet someone. The only one who can help. So point number 4. Wrestling with God. Look at verse 24. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day, until the dawn. Have you wrestled? How do you wrestle? By standing 6 feet apart? No, you close the distance. You come to grips, you hold, grapple, throw, bring down. There's explosive violence, there's controlled aggression. The only time I've ever knocked anybody out was wrestling. It involves speed, strength, endurance. And something that Jacob is very good at. Outwitting your opponent. So Jacob and this stranger, they wrestle. And it's not just a clash of bodies. It's a clash of wills. Who's going to win? And so this wrestling match goes on all through the night. Neither seems to get the better of the other. And then at the breaking of the day, at the dawn, something dramatic happens to break the stalemate. Verse 25. Now when he saw, that's the stranger, that he did not prevail against him, that's Jacob, he touched the socket of his hip and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So with a touch, the contest is over. And the stranger has won. And Jacob's beaten. You can't wrestle, can you, with a dislocated hip? And in that moment, if Jacob hadn't suspected it before, he begins to realize the identity of his opponent. Now think of it, they've been grappling for half the night. It's all blood and thunder. And then something as gentle as a touch, and Jacob is floored. This stranger, no ordinary man. And Jacob is beginning to realize that he has been wrestling with God himself. The God who holds the universe in his hand. The God who could crush Jacob with a thought. The God who conquers wayward Jacob with the gentlest of touches. Verse 26, he said to him, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Now, he's not saying, "Get off, I've got to go, let me free." He's simply saying, "Jacob, it's over. I've conquered you. Give up, you're no match for me. I've won." But Jacob doesn't let go. If this is the God of Abraham, if this is the God of his father Isaac, the God who has promised good to me, how can I let you go? Unless you help me. Unless you bless me. "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Now what's going on here? In a sense, the whole of Jacob's life has been a wrestling match. Even in the womb, we read that Jacob and Esau, as it were wrestling. Even as they're born, he comes out the womb holding on to Esau's heel. The whole of Jacob's life has been a wrestling match. He always seeks to get the better of everyone he meets. And he's very good at it. He's smart, he's quick, he outwits his opponents. And at one level, he's been struggling with men. But at another level, he's been struggling with God. And whilst he can outwit men, he can't outwit God. God is too quick, too fast, too smart, even for Jacob. Jacob, the lad from a godly home, who thought he knew better, who thought by his wits and by his sharpness he could conquer the world, who lived for himself, who doesn't need God because God will slow me down and God will get in the way. And God says, "Really? With one touch I can bring you to your knees. Esau's on his way. You have nowhere to hide. Jacob, in this clash of wills, you have lost. So what are you going to do? Let me go. I've finished with you. I've won. Shall I walk away? After all, we once met at Bethel, didn't we? And that changed nothing. So shall I leave you now? Let me go, for the day breaks. Is that what you want? Just to walk away from you." And for the first time in his life, Jacob realizes, I need God. I need God more than anyone or anything else in the world. And so though his hip is out of joint, he can't wrestle anymore. What he can do is hold on. He's still got strength in his arms. He's still got grip in his fingers. And he says, "Don't leave me. I need you, I need you. I'm not going to let go. Because only you can help me. Only you can save me. I will not let you go unless you bless me." And so point number five. Jacob's conversion. Going it alone has brought Jacob to the brink of disaster. God has backed him into a corner. And he's left holding on. Pleading. Pleading with God to bless him. In the book of Hosea, we read that Jacob wept and begged God. Broken-hearted Jacob. And now for the killer question, which will show whether or not Jacob is ready to be saved. Look at verse 27. God says to him, "What is your name?" Well, maybe you think, well, how can that be the killer question? His name's Jacob. But in this culture, names are more than just names. A name, or your name, was a statement of your identity. That's not so strange, is it? If I say to you, Sepp Blatter, just a name, isn't it? But you don't think of just the name. You think of all the baggage, all the FIFA mess that goes with Sepp Blatter. So when God says, "What is your name?" He's asking Jacob to own up to what he really is. After all, what does his name mean? His name means deceiver, cheat. So he said to him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." "Who am I?" "Lord, I think you know. I'm the deceiver. I'm the man who will do anything to get what he wants. I'm the man who's walked out on God, who's gone it alone, who thought he could do it himself. Even though I knew you were real, even though I had an unforgettable experience of you. I'm the man whose sin has all but destroyed him. And I'm at your mercy." And as he clings on to the Lord, in another sense, he's falling on the Lord's kind arms, isn't he? If you're holding on to someone, that person can tear themselves away, or they can hold on to you. And he's falling upon God's kind arms, and say, "God, be merciful to me, Jacob, the deceiver, the sinner." So what does the Lord do? Does he shake himself loose and say, "Over, Jacob, too late"? Does he walk away? Verse 28, "And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed.'" God changes his name. Israel means God fights. Well, says God to Jacob, "I fought with you, haven't I? And I've conquered you with one touch. But actually, Jacob, you fought with me and conquered me by refusing to let go." It's a new name, because this is a new Jacob, a new identity. He's a new man with a new heart. Jacob is converted. He's no longer the slippery deceiver. He's now a lover of God. He's become a real believer. And like every believer, his first desire is to know God. That's why he says, verse 29, "Then Jacob asked, saying, 'Tell me your name, I pray.'" It's a new relationship. "I want to know all about you." A new relationship. It's a face-to-face relationship. "I want to know you, Lord." And God has to say to him, verse 29, "Why is it that you ask about my name?" All in good time, Jacob. All in good time. And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, which means face of God. "For I've seen the face, for I've seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Jacob will never forget that meeting. He's limping on the outside, but he's leaping for joy on the inside. Limping along, but no longer trusting himself, but leaning on his God. God took Jacob on his own terms. He's the man who outwits everybody else. He's the man who wrestles and overcomes people. Well, says God, I'll come to you on your own terms. We'll have a wrestling match. And God wins. But in the process, he lets Jacob conquer him. I will not let you go unless you bless me. Is everything now okay? Well, if you read on, God takes away Esau's anger. Esau doesn't slaughter him. There will be lots of difficult days ahead for Jacob. But no evil days. As Jacob says at the end of his life, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day. God has been my shepherd. He's watched over me. And of course, the shepherd would lead his sheep safely to the Father's house. He goes home to heaven. Well, it's time to wrap things up. Maybe you're a Jacob. Have you grown up in a godly home? And maybe, like Jacob at Bethel, chapter 28, you've had a real experience of God. An unforgettable experience. God has met with you. Maybe it was a message one evening. One Sunday night you heard and it shook you. Maybe it was something in the hymns. Maybe it was a conversation you had. Maybe it was you just quietly reading the Bible. And it was a real experience of God. Unforgettable. God met with you. And you thought, God is real. And God is here. And God is speaking to me. And maybe at the time you thought, well, I don't know, does that mean I've been converted? Is that what happens when you become... I've grown up in a Christian home. Everyone talked to me about being converted. Have I been converted? Is that what it feels like? Is that what's happened? Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't. Maybe someone's come to you and says, oh, yes, from what you told me, it sounds like you've been converted. And maybe you've thought, just like Jacob at Bethel, you thought, well, if God takes care of me, then I'll make him my God. I'll go through life saying, yeah, this God is my God. Only since that unforgettable experience, things haven't turned out well, have they? Things have gone wrong. And maybe somewhere you feel that God has let you down. Maybe you thought, well, if I became a Christian, Christianity doesn't work, does it? Because I tried that. I said, I'll make God my God, but it's all gone wrong. It hasn't worked out, as it were. It's worn off. Maybe this Christianity stuff doesn't work. I'm afraid the real reason is that you weren't converted. You were like Jacob at Bethel, a real experience of God, but an experience which fell short of really being converted. You knew God was real. You knew God was here. And what you need to do is move from Bethel to Peniel. You need to move from, if you like, from chapter 28 to chapter 32. Not God at the top of the staircase and you hearing his voice and thinking, God is in this place. But you need to meet with God face to face. You need to close the gap. Hold on to him. Not, Lord, I'll give you a tenth if all this works out. But I'm holding on to you and I'm not going to let you go until you save me. Many years ago, I talked with a lovely lady who in her youth had a real experience of God. It was a Bethel experience. But then so much had gone wrong. She thought, well, maybe God had let her down. Maybe none of this is real. Until one day she had a face-to-face meeting with God. She went to Peniel. And she was really converted. And after one service, she called me over. And we've been singing hymn 527. We struggled through it, didn't we, 527? We chose it for a reason. And at the end of each verse, it says, first verse it says, all of self and none of thee, some of self and some of thee, less of self and more of thee, none of self and all of thee. And she said to me, for the first time in my life, I can sing that fourth verse and mean it all. Higher than the highest heavens, deeper than the deepest sea, Lord, thy love at last has conquered. Grant me now my supplication, none of self, and all of thee. I will not let you go till you bless me. My friend, maybe you've had a real experience, an unforgettable experience of God. You've thought if that's conversion, somehow it's worn off. I've just gone back to the old days, the old ways. But it's because it wasn't a saving experience. And maybe it's left you somewhere around the second verse. You know, some of self and some of the... I'm a bit interested in these things and I want to keep my hand in, but really I'm not that interested in these things. I want to do my own thing. Or maybe it's time to meet the Lord at Peniel. Time to make it sure. To hold on to him, to fall on his kind arms, not to let go. Until it's none of self and all of thee. But as we close, maybe like Jacob, you've grown up in a Christian home. But like Jacob, you said, I don't need God. You're quick on your feet, you're smart, you know what you want. And being you, you're determined to have it, whatever the cost, at any price. And that's why God will only get in the way. He'll only slow you down. And where's it got you? Has it got you where Jacob is? Have you made enemies? Is your personal life a mess? Are you on the brink of disaster? Have your sins come back to bite you? And you're running out of options. And you think that you're having to fight others when actually all the time you've been wrestling with God. And sure, you can get the better of others. You're fast, you're quick, you can keep one step ahead. But really, what's going on under it all is that you're wrestling with God. And what you don't realize is that God is fast. And you think he's the old man in the sky doddering along. And he's fast and he's quick and he's powerful and he's smarter than you. And they outwit you every time. The God who could crush you with a thought. It's like playing British Bulldog, isn't it? Do you remember? British Bulldog. You think God's in the middle and I run backwards and forwards. He never catches me, he never catches me, he never catches me. Because he hasn't chosen to. He's fast. He could crush you, but he hasn't. In fact, maybe like Jacob, he's brought you to your knees. With nothing more severe than a gentle touch. And you're boxed in. And you have nowhere to go. You don't know what to do. And tonight God says to you in verse 26, he says, let me go. You've been fighting me. And I've won. It's been all too easy. I've conquered you. I've won. I've defeated you. I've spoken to you. I've protected you. But you haven't changed. Do you want me to walk away? Do you want me to leave you to it? Shall I let you destroy yourself? Shall I let you run backwards and forwards, British Bulldog, and you going, ha ha ha, God hasn't caught me yet, and actually you're just going to run off the edge and destroy yourself? What's your answer? Do you want God to leave you? To walk away? Never bother you again? Or do you want him to bless you? What did Jacob say? He said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Is that what you want? Do you want the Lord more than anything or anyone else in the world? Are you tired of running? Do you want a face-to-face relationship? Do you want Him to save you? Then you must answer that killer question. What is your name? Are you going to own up to what you really are, to who you really are, to what you've done? That you are a liar, that you are a cheat, that you do use people, that you always think you know best, that you always think you're clever and one step ahead of the others, that you can look after number one, that I don't need God? You can ask that question. What is your name? What is your name? Me, Lord? I think you know. I'm the sinner. I'm the sinner. And all I can do is fall on your kind arms and cling to you and cry, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. What is your name? It's the same question that God will ask you on Judgment Day. And if on that day you are not saved, there'll be no God to cling to, no blessing to gain, only the burning darkness of hell. Do you want God to leave you to that? Or do you want God to bless you? To save you? Then tell Him your name. Tell Him your sin. Cling to Him until He blesses you with His wonderful salvation. I will not let you go unless you bless me. And if, like Jacob, verse 29, you ask, what is your name? He will answer, my name is Jesus. Because we see the face of God in Jesus Christ. The Jesus who died on a cross to save guilty, condemned sinners. And the Jesus who has come here tonight looking for you, a stubborn sheep. A willful, defiant, stubborn sheep which He's driven into a corner. Do you want Him to walk away and leave you to it? What is your name?